From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM next hour. Incredible events require incredible stories. Stephen Quayle joins us for the full program. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Government health officials are now warning that salmonella bacteria detected in an outbreak of food poisoning from popular turkey burgers may be resistant to common drugs used to fight serious infection. At least a dozen people in 10 states have been sickened by raw frozen turkey burger products produced by Jennie-O Turkey Store in Wilmar, Minnesota. The firm recalled nearly 55,000 pounds of meat last week after the illnesses were reported. Here's our food safety expert, Jeff Nelkin, on with him. And Jeff, here we go again, another salmonella possibility. It happens all the time, doesn't it?
Well, we're going to have to make sure that, people that are buying, or I think they have this particular product, they should go to the health department's website because they have specific dates and numbers on these items that need to be returned. And also the importance of course, making sure that we cook this product all the way up to 165 degrees so we can kill the salmonella.
Is it unusual that so many people would get sick because of turkey burgers?
I'm just thinking that people are not, thinking about cooking this product to 165, and they're thinking about, like a regular hamburger, let's have a rare or a medium hamburger, and that would allow for the salmonella to survive.
Jeff, on your website, foodsafetycoach.com, do you give people tips on things like this?
If they ask about it, we certainly will.
All right, very good.
Thanks.
Jeff Nelkin, our food safety expert. Seeing a milkshake can activate the same areas of the brain that light up when an addict sees cocaine, according to U.S. researchers. The study helps explain why it can be so hard for some people to maintain a healthy weight and why it has been so difficult for drug makers and health experts to find obesity treatments that simply work. The Japanese government set its first radiation safety standards for fish after Japan's tsunami-ravaged nuclear plant reported radioactivity contamination in nearby seawater measuring, listen to this, at least several hundred million times the legal limit. The plant operator insisted that radiation will rapidly disperse and that it poses no immediate danger, but an expert said exposure to the highly concentrated levels near the plant could cause immediate injury and that the leaks could result in residual contamination in the sea area for years to come. The ozone layer has been unprecedented damage in the Arctic this winter due to cold weather in the upper atmosphere. By the end of March, 40% of the ozone in the stratosphere had been destroyed against a previous record of 30%. The ozone layer protects against skin cancer, but the gas is destroyed by reactions with industrial chemicals. Two new studies could change care for hundreds of thousands of heart patients each year. One finds that bypass surgery has been overrated for many people with very weak hearts from clogged arteries and previous heart attacks. The other challenges the way artery opening procedures have been done for decades. It was the first big test of doing balloon angioplasty to clear heart arteries through an arm instead of a leg. Complications were fewer with the arm method, and at hospitals that did this more often, deaths, heart attacks, and other big problems were lower. The arm method is common in India, Israel, Europe, and Canada, but less than 5% of the U.S. cases are done this way. A doctor at the University of California in San Francisco says this is the way we should be headed. Here's our own Christian Wild. MyHeartBook.com. Christian, why are we still going through the leg and all these other countries are going through the arm now for these surgeries?
Well, first of all, let me say to you and to Tom Danheiser, thank you very much for including me with your distinguished guests at the forum this last weekend in Long Beach. I had a very good time.
Well, you did a great job for us.
Thank you. This morning when I read this, I called our mutual friend, Dr. Warren Sherman at Columbia University. Dr. Sherman has performed as many angioplasties as anybody in the country, but he has also developed catheters for his own procedures. And in our discussion, he said that because now they're able to make a very small catheter, they can carry the stent, they can go in through the radial artery, which is the one they're talking about in the arm. Now, if you looked at this purely from a real estate point of view, it's a longer distance to go through the femoral traditional method in the leg and up into the heart. Therefore, there's more chance of encountering a problem by dislodging plaque. There is probably more opportunity to have a failed procedure in which they rupture or penetrate the wall of the artery. The second study, if I may briefly comment on that.
Sure.
It talks about heart failure patients and the importance of having bypass surgery, but that the life expectancy wasn't that great after they did it. Well, of course it wouldn't be that great because they are not treating the heart that's in heart failure. They're simply opening the plumbing. There was a study done earlier that was multifaceted. Not only did they open the grafts or provide the grafts to open the blood flow, at the same time, they injected the patient's already harvested stem cells into the heart muscle itself in these heart failure patients. They cured both problems at the same time. If you and I had a car with our front tires worn out, we would certainly not only put on new tires, but we would also have the front end aligned again.
Yes,
right?
Really.
Well,
yes.
Otherwise you'd be bound to repeat the procedure.
I just don't understand, Christian, with modern medicine the way it is, and with technology the way it is, why it seems that we're so far behind these other countries here.
Well, they're not bound by the strict qualifications and guidelines that we are. In many countries, they're free to do whatever they want to try. But we are always concerned that a patient may not survive any procedure until we've gone the full course. That's probably the main reason. But then the pharmaceutical companies, they loved the idea a few years ago that if they were to increase statin therapy aggressively, they could reduce some of these blockages, and therefore the patient could survive and not have to go through open heart, etc. So, and there was some benefit from that. But if you're going to treat the patient, treat the entire patient, treat the heart failure, and treat the open heart at the same time.
You got it. Christian, thanks so much for your input as well. One of India's best-known spiritual leaders, famous for his apparent miracles and long list of influential followers, is on life support in a southern hospital. Satya Sai Baba, 85 years old, who has devotees in more than 100 countries, was admitted to a hospital with lung and chest congestion on March 28th. His condition has worsened, and he is now on a ventilator and is receiving kidney dialysis. Up next, Norio Hayakawa joins us. We're going to be talking about the tragedy in Japan and how UFOs tie into this. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Norio Hayakawa calls himself an unorthodox ufologist and activist. He has spent almost 10 years plus specifically investigating Area 51 in Nevada. And he says that there is so much to Area 51 than just facts, superficial facts, that made public aware about this well-known base. Here's Norio Hayakawa back on Coast to Coast. Norio, how are you? Welcome back.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much, George, for having me again on your show.
My pleasure. Our condolences to your friends and I'm sure family members out in Japan after this tragedy that occurred several weeks ago.
Well,
I can't imagine how bad it is for those
people.
Yes,
this is definitely a tragedy. It's incredible. It's a total tragedy. It's a sad thing, but I'm convinced that, many other disasters and tragedies that Japan went through in, 100s of years and, let's say thousands of years, Japan will always recover from this type of situation somehow. Suddenly, yes, there have been about 30,000 people altogether that may have perished from this disaster. But of course, you know, 30,000 is a big number. However, you know, remember that when we had the Haiti the earthquake that you were talking about, 300,000. But you know, it's sort of miraculous in a way that this earthquake and the tsunami took place in northeastern coastal areas of Japan, where you know, it was quite far from the major industrialized areas like major cities in central and western Japan, like Tokyo, Yokohama, Osaka, Nagoya, and, you know, Hiroshima, and so on. So if it had struck Tokyo, of course, you know, you would, I mean, this would have been unimaginable. But nevertheless, the this disaster struck in coastal, you know, farming communities and retirement villages, and, you know, where a lot of senior citizens were living. And so, relatively speaking, George, the disaster really affected, yes, these retired people and the elderly who lived in these small villages and small towns along the northeastern coastal areas of Japan. So that's one of the reasons why the I would say that, yeah, there were a lot of casualties, especially the elderly people who didn't have much time to escape. But nevertheless, this is a tragedy. But we have to separate three items. George, we're talking about earthquake and, of course, the tsunami, which very few people, you know, expected in such a big scale. And then, of course, the last one, and it's a very important one, is the current ongoing, you know, nuclear problem. So we're talking about three separate things.
And had the earthquake alone just hit Norio, it probably would not have been nearly as devastating.
Exactly,
as it is,
George, because in 1995, Japan experienced a major earthquake in Kobe, a large city. That was 1995, and about 7,000 people died. But after 1995, the structural codes were very, very became very stringent, and even residential areas in even northeastern Japan, even small villages and so on, the structures were pretty, you know, were enforced as far as structural codes. So actually, you see in the many videos and photos, some houses were, the roof and the walls were intact, but they just dislocated themselves because of the unprecedented tsunami, and that's what really did that. So this is definitely a shocking thing. But as I mentioned to you, George, in 1995, the Kobe earthquake took place, but within 5 years from 1995, in other words, the year 2000, one could really can't really tell that Kobe experienced an earthquake. So in 5 years, you know, Kobe, the city of Kobe, completely recovered. You can't.
The Japanese people, as you well know, rebuild and rebuild pretty darn fast, don't they?
I believe so. Yes, there's no question about it. But what we're experiencing right now is the unprecedented nature of this, you know, tsunami, and of course, the more importantly, I think the nuclear problem, nuclear disaster. It's something that nobody has experienced. Nobody has experienced how to handle this situation, and you know, I think the big problem is the lack of communication among the people involved. There's a separation between the government and the private company, the Tokyo Electric Power, and you know, all kind of politics and you know, this saving face and this kind of thing. So we got to separate the people of Japan from the government of Japan. And it's not only Japan, but I'm sure that there's a large nuclear lobby that you know, is involved in you know, possibly covering up a lot of these you know, items in those nuclear plants.
Well, Noria, let me ask you this. You've spent a lot of time in your career investigating UFOs. What's going on in Japan right now since the earthquake? Are there more reports of unusual UFO activity?
No question about it, George. In fact, even before March 11th, there had been a number of quite a large number of people that had taken footages of strange lights, even this January and February, and you know, and then going into March 11th, you know, thousands of people with their cell phones can take pictures. But especially after and on the day of the earthquake, there have been a lot of footages taken by cell phones in Japan that show some interesting, you know, lights moving around and so on. But you know, in fact, yesterday, a volcano in Japan, southern Japan, called Sakurajima, erupted again, and somebody posted a very interesting, you know, photo of some lights, what apparently, you know, at the bottom of this mountain. But you know, some of these images are very, very difficult to really tell what exactly those things are. It could be anything.
But, Nori, we know when the Chernobyl disaster occurred in the former Soviet Union that there were UFO reports all over that Chernobyl site.
Yes.
Are we getting more and more of that in Japan as well?
I think so, too. I think so. If you go to YouTube right now, there are many footages of interesting lights in the you know, Japan ever since the earthquake. And so this, you know, is something that is very interesting. In times of natural disasters, it's you know, statistically wise, there'll be more people that claim to have seen a lot of things in the atmosphere. So whether or not this necessarily, you know, I don't think we can jump into conclusion and say right away that, you know, these are, you know, aliens in a spacecraft coming here. But it could also be other things. It could be something. It could be something. Something could be manifesting themselves as and waking us up as we approach, you know, next year, 2012. I think that it's possible that in this universe there are other realities that could be observing us and maybe manifesting themselves to us to learn. And I think this tragedy in Japan is a learning experience, and it happened just, you know, this year, right before 2012. Yes, definitely to the people who were victims of this sad tragedy, it was like an apocalypse, no question about it.
Sure thing.
But I think this is a wake-up call. There's no question, George, that in this world that we really don't know much about anyway to begin with, we may be faced with, you know, an encounter with a different force that would like to interact with us and occasionally revealing themselves and materializing themselves, not clearly, but in a fuzzy way.
Let's talk more about that, Norio, when we come back, and also your work with the Federation of American Scientists and what you're all looking for. We'll also take some phone calls up next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're going to talk about the New World Order next hour with Stephen Quayle. Get ready for that. And when we come back, we'll take your phone calls and continue our discussion with the researcher, Noria Hayakawa, on Coast to Coast AM. Norio, you are a supporter of an organization called the Federation of American Scientists. They are one of the nation's largest and most well-funded citizens group. They look at government accountability. Tell me about your interest with them.
Well, I support them because we need accountability. The Federation of American Scientists have done a lot of things, items that the public, can benefit in from. And, for example, let's take even nuclear issues. Yes, we need to have accountability, and groups like the Federation of American Scientists definitely play a major role in, monitoring any kind of black projects program that uses, certain kind of energy and, also have to deal with how to dispose of toxic chemicals and nuclear waste and so on. That is the biggest problem facing any kind of black projects programs, how to dispose of waste materials. So I certainly support this organization. In fact, this organization was one of the first major organizations to check into, Area 51 back in the early 90s. And they have taken a lot of photos and so on. So I support this group. Of course, they do not go into things like UFOs and the paranormal. Because they deal strictly with, the traditional so-called empirical methodology in a lot of, researches. But anyway, that does not mean that they are not interested in this mysterious phenomenon called the UFO phenomenon. And by the way, George, as I mentioned to you, a lot of people have taken a strange, fascinating videos of what appeared to be some strange objects flying, even right near the nuclear, reactors and so on.
That's right.
By the sea. But of course, there are many things that had been mistaken, misidentified, like helicopters. In fact, one video showed a white object moving. Around that Fukushima area, but it turned out to be a helicopter. So, we can't really say that, these things are, alien spacecraft and so on. But, of course, we really don't know the truth. But I believe that I think this is a tremendous opportunity, a learning lesson. To be prepared for any eventuality that we are facing, especially as we go into tumultuous period of history. And I think it's always a good idea to be prepared physically as well as spiritually. And it's definitely a wake-up call. And I told you before that I don't believe in coincidences, but
nor do I.
In January, Nancy Wallace, Albuquerque. I live in Albuquerque, in fact, Rio Rancho, New Mexico. But she suggested that we should have a Wake Up Now conference in Albuquerque for the first time, and I'm excited about it. I think because of this, unprecedented tragedy in Japan, I think it's really has given us a wake-up call. And, I'm excited because we're going to have this three-day conference in Albuquerque for the first time. It's called a Wake Up Now Conference. And there's going to be about 16 speakers and so on, you know, from around the world. But, you know, this is just a sample of how, you know, everything leads one thing to another. And it's all destined. And,
well, it sure is. Well, I want to take some phone calls with you, Norio. Then I want to get into your belief system of ETs, because I find this fascinating with you. Let's pick it up by going to Corning, California. Terry's with us. West of the Rockies. Terry, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, gentlemen. First off, yeah, I've got a question and then just a comment, and I'll leave it there.
Okay.
The question first is, there are lights I've read about and heard about, we've all heard about, and I don't have enough knowledge on it. I'd love your guest, Norio, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Lights that tend to sort of, I don't know, ooze out of the cracks, the magnetic fields before an earthquake and or after or during, kind of like the St. Elmo's fire type lights. And I'm curious about what is the nature of that? How scientifically is that confirmed? And then a second thing is, George, I feel such a rapport with you when you were talking about your feeling that you know, there was going to be a problem with the sun and so forth before the earthquake happened in Japan. I was talking with a spiritual friend of mine, a lady friend of mine, and I was telling her for, you know, a week prior to that that I was picking up on just a feeling that I couldn't even put words to. And gosh, it's amazing. I think we're all becoming sensitive, and it is time to wake up now. and the comment that I wanted to make is there is something about a red rain coming that I'm getting. I've had this for like 6 months, getting stronger, and I'm curious, does anybody have any scientific knowledge that would help me to understand what would cause a kind of red rain, kind of a Fortean, you know, blood and flesh fall type deal? What could possibly explain that? I really do think we're going to see some kind of red rain. I don't know what the ramifications would be, but I think we need to gear up for that event coming soon. So please remember that is on its way, I really do believe. And I'll just go and take my answers off the air on this. And thanks for providing a forum, and meditations to Sai Baba. I was really...
85 years old, so he's lived a good life. Let's see how long he can fight. In terms of the red rain, Linda Moultonhauer, investigative reporter, has done some segments on that, whatever it may be and where it comes from. Though many of us believe that it comes from outer space in kinds of rains down on us. These plasma balls he was talking about, Norio, that seem to be emitted prior to an earthquake. Have you looked at those at all, or do you know much about them?
Well, I've heard about it and I've read about it, but I'm not a specialist on that. But, you know, ball lightning is, and so on, and other phenomena are actually have been studied and continue to be studied. And we don't know exactly the nature of it, but, you know, it's something that seems to occur when, you know, there's a crack on the... or fishing, you know, on the land and so on, prior to earthquake and so on. So I think it's a very fascinating study, scientific study that's still being conducted. But the other element of strange lights is, of course, you know, it could be a manifestation of another intelligence that is trying to, you know, interact with us and sending us some kind of a message. So we cannot debunk things like this. You know, as you see, all the video footages of so-called UFOs are basically fuzzy looking, and, you know, it's not a clear shape. And so this is why it's a mystery. And, you know, if you see something that has like 7 or 8 windows and, you know, all of those things in a flying saucer in a clear photo, you know, you're talking about that specifics. But most of the vast majorities of photos and video footages of so-called UFOs are simply blobs of light that could be anything. And so... you know, we have been with this UFO phenomena from time immemorial.
Long time, exactly.
Oh, that's right. And we still don't have the answer, George, and that is the mystery. And we cannot refute that there are such things as this phenomena, because this phenomena is real. The question is whether we are, you know, sure that this is an intelligently controlled physical spacecraft from elsewhere. There's no proof to that. There could be, you know, like Dr. Jack Galay says many times, we cannot jump into conclusions. And I agree with him. And we still continue and to have an open mind and not jump into any conclusions. But certainly we are definitely living in some amazing times, no question about it. You know, people's anxiety also in these times of disasters and, you know, crisis, people's anxieties can also possibly produce this phenomenon. That's one way of, you know, that's one way of thinking about it. But also at the same time, we may indeed be encountering a manifestation, a temporal physical manifestation of some kind of intelligence that want to break through this dimension and try to give us some like a wake-up call.
Let's go to Racine, Wisconsin. We've got Tim on the wild card line. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Hi, George, and hi, Ben.
Hi. You're with Norio Hayakawa.
No, how did you say that?
Norio.
Hi, Norio.
Yes,
I have a question. I mean, I've seen green, like fluorescent. I was coming home from, like, I believe it was like a Christmas time. It was in Bristol, Wisconsin. And I was watching this. I was going down Highway 50 going east. And this thing went west. And all of a sudden I turned on the radio. And all of a sudden I started hearing people talk about this light going across the sky because it was fluorescent. It was like a green.
Sounds like a meteorite, Tim, was it?
No, it was not a meteorite because this thing was going way too slow to be a meteorite.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I did never see nothing like this, but this wasn't the only time this has happened. And another time I was going to work, and this was like at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I happened to take a different route this morning. And there's a power plant that it went across. And I told my mom and dad about it, and they thought I was crazy.
No, you're not crazy. Look, 99% of the American people or people in Canada or any place else are seeing very strange objects that they can't explain. Norio, what percent do you think are natural, man-made, our own kind of craft, or perhaps extraterrestrial?
Well, I think most so-called ufologists seem to think, from what I gather, that, you know, about 95% of what we see could have prosaic explanations like new military technology, you know, UAVs such as UAVs and you know, other remotely controlled platforms, and then new types of generations of aircraft, military aircraft, and so on. But, of course, you know, there's always maybe 5%, and even there's a 1% chance that this could be from another intelligence. We can't really go by percentages. Even 1% is correct, then, you know, it's something really amazing.
That's true. Cody is in Cleveland and up on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Cody.
Hi, George. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, my pleasure.
And Norio, I wanted to say, dozo yoroshiku onegai shimasu.
Oh, you're very good. Where did you learn that? your pronunciation is very good. You just said, pleased to meet you and so on.
I hope he did. I'd never know.
I had a comment about the UFO activity that you mentioned in Japan, And what came to my mind was a couple reports that I have heard about facilities in the U.S. where there were stockpiles of nuclear weapons and there was some UFO activity and the weapons were deactivated. I'm a student of the literature of Walter Russell, kind of an obscure philosopher scientist from the early part of the century, and he talks about that matter can be transmuted into other matter with magnetic fields, basically. So it occurred to me that it's possible that a civilization with more advanced technology would be able to sort of...
Exactly. I know what you mean. You know, this is just exactly like this. You know, it's like a colony of ants, an ant colony that is right under the freeway underpass, you know. Those ants living in that ant colony, you know, underneath the freeway overpass, you know, their world is absolutely completely different. And so this is the, you know, exactly what could be, that we're just too insignificant and, you know, we could be just the ant colony facing the super highway above where hundreds of cars are passing along in, you know, 80 miles per hour. It's a different world, but it's a reality. Both are reality. So, yes, I think we need to keep an open mind because not everything is manifested physically. And that's my belief, that there are things in this world that we cannot see that exist. They have to exist, multi-dimensional realities.
I used to do some stupid things as a kid, Norio. One of them was every time I saw a small anthill, I would knock it down to see how long it took them to rebuild it. And, you know, it was kind of stupid and cruel, I guess, to do it in retrospect. But I got to tell you, by the next morning, they had it rebuilt again. What is it about insects like that, ants, where they just keep working? Almost reminds me of people in some cases.
That's exactly what comparison is. But, you know, we're facing a lot of crises these days. But, you know, I think we must overcome any type of fear. And fear, along with fear-mongering and along with exaggerated doom and gloom. And I think we can overcome these. And I think it's very more important now to learn a lesson from this tragedy in Japan. And, you know, that's my belief. And this is the reason why I'm so excited. I mentioned to you that in Albuquerque, I live in Rio Rancho right next to Albuquerque, but, you know, I would like to invite many of you to just visit this beautiful city and come to this Wake Up Now conference. And it's on my website. But, you know, I think this is a destiny that we have this conference here in New Mexico, where I think it's there's a special energy. And I think it's a learning lesson. And, you know, I encourage a lot of you to visit this place and attend this conference. It's really actually a conference to help establish the school of now. Special school for gifted children. So I think it's a good cause.
Well, it sure is. Norio, thank you so much for being on the program. His websites, he's got a couple with some various links. You'll find them at coasttocoastam.com. Up next in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, Stephen Quayle joins us, and we will talk about the New World Order. You don't believe it's happening? Wait until you hear Stephen Quayle. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.